Welcome to the online worship with Western Hills Church of Christ. I'm Dan Lang, lead minister. This weekend, we have celebrated our independence as a nation, and what a wonderful nation in which we live. We have far more blessings and freedoms than we deserve. We're grateful for the personnel who have put their lives on the line for our freedoms. But you know, recent events have painfully reminded us that not everyone in our land experiences as much liberty as others. We cannot blindly continue in this way. So may God grant us the grace and wisdom to make changes. And may His people not fuel the fire of division, but may we lead the way to reconciliation and renewal. Now, at Western Hills Church of Christ, we continually make it clear that the kingdom of Jesus is not, it's really not of this world. It's not about any one nation. Our primary allegiance is to King Jesus as our authority, and His kingdom includes people from every tribe, language, and nation. And so we make that a part of who we are and what we're about. Well, as we get into the service today, once again, we're glad that you're joining us. And would you pause the video right now to do the Sunday check-in that's located just below this video? It helps us stay connected with you. There's also a worship playlist that you can scroll down to, and you can sing some worship songs. And then you can take time to observe the Lord's Supper in your home, serving yourself the bread and juice. And also, please consider using our online giving app. It's right there on this website. It helps with the local and global mission of providing a foundation of hope and helping people build new lives in Christ. Or if you don't want to use the online giving, you can simply mail your offerings to the church. Either way, we thank you for your generosity. So when you've done all that, when you've done the Sunday check-in and the singing and the communion and the giving, then simply return to this video and I'll present today's message. What a year it is. And we're glad that at least we can get back together here at church. Now, those of you who are joining us online, we're glad you're joining us that way. So many have commented that they can't wait for 2020 to be over. And some have said it's the most memorable year of their lives. In fact, many say the worst year that they can ever remember. I saw one meme from the movie Back to the Future featuring Doc with the time machine DeLorean warning Marty McFly, hey, remember, never set the date to the year 2020. Whatever you do, don't do that. Someone else playfully mused, I always wondered what it was like living during the Civil War, the Spanish flu, the Great Depression, the Civil Rights Movement, Watergate, and the Dust Bowl. Not all at once, mind you, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers and all. I thought that was kind of fun. Anyway, add to all that we're going through the volatile circus of the upcoming election and the eruptive climate that will surely ensue regardless of who's elected. You know it's coming. And so while we cringe at all this stuff, the media just loves it. In fact, they wield it to create more news, more provocation, more drama, because that sells people watching. Social media is basically no different. There's so much stuff on there, and everyone seems to be telling us what we should think, what we should do, what we can say, what we can't say, what narrative to believe. And you know what? All the stuff that we're being barraged with, what should we believe? Really, what should we believe? And how can we even speak or live without offending or being counter to someone these days? It's a crazy time. Now, I certainly don't have all the answers, but I know the one who does. I know him. But at the same time, when I say that, I don't think God always spells out specifically what we should do in every single situation. He often just gives us principles that we are to apply. I believe he wants us to wrestle it out, to come to our convictions led by his Spirit and by the Word. And then as we take what we hear in the Word and we apply that to our particular circumstances. Now, to do that, we need some tools for critical thinking. Today and in the coming weeks, we're going to dig into the 2020 Survival Toolbox. We're going to learn how to use tools such as courage and conviction, self-awareness, applying wisdom to what we're experiencing, interpretation and discerning truth, skills for relational interaction and civility, as well as establishing healthy community and more. So I hope that you'll participate as we do this 2020 Survival Toolbox. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, the Apostle Paul enumerates a rapid-fire set of tools that we can use here. I think they really fit. And so, first of all, he says, be on guard. In other words, the tool is to develop discernment. Be vigilant and wary in your beliefs and in your walk with the Lord. Watch out for threats to your spiritual well-being and to the mission of Jesus. Be on guard. Another tool, stand firm in the faith. Know what you believe and know why you believe it. Be able to articulate that. Familiarity with truth exposes any falsehood that comes our way. Be uncompromising in the truth. Stand firm in the faith. Take your stand. And then he says, be people of courage. Be strong. People of courage. So he's encouraging us to be bold, to stand up for and speak up for what's right, what's good, even in the face of danger and at any cost. Are you willing? We need that tool these days. But then he wraps everything up with this statement, and do everything in love. Do everything in love. This is so important. You can be right and be brutal and offensive, and we don't want that. In your courageous stand, always be committed to the well-being of others. People aren't going to care about what you know until they know how much you really care. So I think to help us use the tools of courage and conviction in our current climate, I want us to turn to Jesus' healing of the blind man that's recorded in John's Gospel, chapter 9. Can you find that passage? John's Gospel, chapter 9. And I'd like to begin with verses 1 and 2, where it tells us, as he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Yeah, they're stumped. They can't figure this out. They have some misunderstandings. And so what we need to learn is that it takes courage to navigate a culture of ignorance. Because you know what? Today, too many people are denying reality, denying history, denying the obvious. Some do not understand because they've not been taught. They haven't educated themselves. Maybe they've been misinformed along the way. Maybe they just have not experienced it for themselves, so they don't know. Or maybe they've assumed things that are simply not true. In fact, I think I need to assume that I'm more like the disciples in this account in John 9 than the one who's in the know. I think we need to adopt a teachable spirit. And Jesus explained, well, guys, it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it's so that the works of God might be displayed in him. But the problem is, it's so easy to jump to conclusions. People do it all the time. We jump to conclusions when we begin to try to operate from our own assumptions and our incomplete information. The bold statements are made without knowledge. I think they plague our culture today. My friend shared with me that he sat down in a Bob Evans restaurant to enjoy breakfast and with his newspaper and a cup of coffee and bacon and eggs and so on. And suddenly from behind him, what appeared to be the manager of this restaurant shouted across the dining room, "Hey, Alexa!" Now, she was not talking to the device. "Hey, Alexa!" This was an actual waitress that was being the manager was talking to. "You can't put that chair on the end of the tables like that." And Alexa retorted, "I'm going to do it anyway." "Alexa, wait, that's against the code. It violates social distancing rules. We can't do that right now." And Alexa barked back, "It's the only way to fit this party in here. You know, so you can fire me if you want, but I'm going to do it." Please, please, Alexa, don't do that. The Board of Health, the fire marshal, the government could come in here and close us down if they see this violation. "I'm doing it, and you can just fire me," she said. Well, patiently, the manager suggested a different way to accomplish what was needed in this situation. And Alexa said, "Oh, okay, I guess that'll work." And so she did it that way. Problem solved. Good news. But my friend said, "I don't know the individuals involved in this exchange. I don't know if the corrector was even the manager or not, just sounded like the manager. I didn't know the whole background story and what was needed in this situation. I didn't know the code. I didn't know the store policy or the government requirements. I didn't know what party they were trying to accommodate. I didn't know all about that. I didn't know Alexa's story and why she was responding this way. I only knew what I heard, but I didn't have the whole context. And yet everyone in that restaurant, including me, drew a conclusion." Some were probably thinking, "That way, Alexa, stand up for what you think is right. Don't give in to management. Don't give in to the system." And others were no doubt thinking, "Go ahead and fire that girl. She deserves it. You know, she shouldn't be so defiant like that." But the point is this. With only partial information, how can we judge what to do? How can we judge what's the right thing in this situation? And yet it happens every day in the court of public opinion. We do this kind of thing all the time. My friend added, he said, "You know, I went and told my mom this scenario that happened at Bob Evans, and she asked, 'Well, what did he say?'" As he was telling the story, he said, "Well, who do you mean?" "Now, the manager, what did he say?" And my friend said, this was another false assumption. The manager was a woman. See, we have all kinds of assumptions. We cannot navigate our current culture in ignorance. We should proceed cautiously. We should try to understand as much as we can. We should proceed in such a way that if we do know the truth, if we do know the whole story, we should be ready to face those who respond without knowledge. And they may respond strongly, but not have the whole picture. One of my friends was courteously and gently explaining some of the current racial issues that are going on, some of the terminology that's being used, some of the feelings from the perspective as a Black American, and she was doing this on social media. And it was very respectful, a way to get some dialogue about some of these difficult issues. And more importantly, it was an opportunity to clarify and to inform, particularly her white friends. And it was a beautiful example of navigating the uninformed in the way of Jesus. And the truth is, as I appreciated what she was saying and how she was going about it, one thing, just one thing she said seemed to counter my biblical convictions. And so I could have argued with her. I could have gone off on her. But instead, I followed the tactic that she herself had suggested in her blog. I asked for clarification of the terminology she was using, which she humbly and graciously provided. And it turns out what she meant and what I assumed she meant were actually two different things, and there was no conflict at all. So I'm glad that we were able to dialogue it out. But that's what we have to do. We need to learn to communicate and navigate when there's misunderstanding, when there's lack of understanding. Well, verses 6 through 12 in John tell how Jesus proceeded to heal this blind man, and it was a genuine miracle that identified Jesus as Lord. And then when the man came back seeing, some were quite astonished. Well, isn't this the man who was born blind? And now here he sees, you know. And verse 9 says, still others were thinking, no, he only looks like the blind man. I'll tell you what, it takes courage to navigate a culture of conflicting perceptions. Here, this man kept trying to convince everyone that he was the same person, now healed. And looking at the same evidence, some of the crowd believed and some doubted. They had the same evidence in front of them. Some believed, some doubted. And we're going to run into the same thing. As people will look, for example, they'll look at this universe, this great earth, and all the living creatures, all the people in it, and they're going to conclude, Creator. This is creation. This is intelligent design here. But others are going to conclude, no, there's no creator. This is the result of billions of years of evolution. And still others are going to look at everything, and they're going to conclude, no, this is obviously some kind of creation. This is design, but it's by the process of evolution. People also look at the economy. And one group will say, well, here's the solution. Here's the way to make it better. But then someone else is going to say, no, let's do it this way. And yet another has a better idea. And that's what happened. There are different perceptions and ideas out there. We can all look at the same incident and come away with a different perception of what happened or what needs to be done. Some only see what they want to see. And there are really a lot of things that shape the way we view our world and our experiences. Faith, for example, or lack of faith. Our upbringing shapes that. Experiences, value systems, assumptions, who we're listening to out there. All these things have a role in shaping our perception, our worldviews. What do you see in these three images that we're putting on the screen for you? In the left image, do you see the chalice? Or do you see the two faces facing one another up close and personal? See the chalice or the two faces? Look at the middle image now. Don't get bogged down there. Look at the middle image. Do you see a tree? Or do you see an ape and a lion facing each other? Which do you see? Perception. Or what about the picture on the right? Do you see that woman's face, you know, kind of shadowed a little bit? Do you see her face? Or do you see a man with a big nose playing a saxophone? You see that? Or maybe, perhaps your mind allows you to see both of these things rather easily. Your mind can shift back and forth between the things. It's perception. You know, years ago, when I was a youth minister, I would do things with my youth group like blindfold all my students so that they would have to navigate everything we did as a blind person. They wouldn't be able to see. They'd have to feel their way around and figure things out. And it really changed their perspective. It was, being blind was an eye-opening experience for them. And it's so important that we learn to really listen to one another and try to appreciate the other person's experience, perspective, and where they're coming from. Even if ultimately we don't agree, it's still important for us to try to understand the perceptions. Our son, Caleb, is half Hispanic by birth. When we adopted him, family and relatives all wanted to meet him and celebrate with us. And so there was different gatherings, different occasions when we got together. And at one of those gatherings of family, we, two very excited little boys, began to dance and chant, "Caleb's a little Mexican, Caleb's a little Mexican." And they were just having fun. I don't believe for an instant they were trying to do any harm. But it was racist behavior. And where did they learn that? These little boys. I was protective. And I was angry, to be honest. I put a stop to it right away. And I explained, or perhaps maybe I even scolded, that their chant was disrespectful and inappropriate. That's not how you talk about people. But I remember suddenly racism was very personal to me for the very first time. Oh, I knew about it. I heard about it. I'd seen it. But for me, it became personal. And I gained a new perspective, a smidgen of what many experience on a regular basis. When people see things differently, it takes courage to talk about some uncomfortable things between you, to listen, to understand, to try to see things from someone else's perspective, and to communicate through the barriers of perception. You know, for example, can I say Black Lives Matter? And actually, they do. So can I say Black Lives Matter without being identified with or supporting the Black Lives Matter organization, which openly advocates sexual immoral lifestyles right there on their website, right in their statements of who they are and what they're about? See, navigating perceptions of people out there is tricky, because people are going to assume things when that's not what you meant at all. Well, they brought the healed man to the Jewish leaders. The man told his story, and these leaders challenged in verses 16 and 17 of John 9. "What have you to say about Jesus? It was your eyes he opened." And the man replied, "He is a prophet. He's a prophet." Well, they're upset because Jesus did this on the Sabbath. They were saying he can't. He broke the law. He can't be a good man. He said he's a prophet. It takes courage to navigate a culture of spin and agenda. And I think this is a really big issue today. Everyone seems to have an agenda, and they take the news, they take the issue at hand, and they spin it for their own purposes. And then that makes it hard to know what narrative to really believe, because you don't know what's spin and what's true. I can't even begin to count the number of versions of the current hot issue of racism that I've heard from African Americans. A variety of versions from African Americans, let alone all the white versions and the variety of Christian versions and the secular versions and the political versions, the historical versions and the youth versions. There's so many versions out there. And I'm even more amazed that unrelated social issues get wrapped up into the racism issue because people with agendas want to ride the wave of public commotion because they want to change the norms. They want to ride this wave. It has nothing to do with racism. Racism demands some changes in our culture, to be sure. But it's also true, not all the demands are wise. We've got to sift through it. And I'll tell you another thing. Because there is so much spin these days with all these narratives, it's so hard to convince people to take the gospel narrative seriously. They think it's just more spin. The world, especially through the media, is trying to normalize homosexuality right now. They want us to believe that narrative. Now, I don't mean to pick on this one issue, but the world is making it an issue right now, and so I'm going to respond to it. A sympathetic view to the plight of the ostracized gay person becomes a part of so many sitcoms and dramas and movies these days in the media. And sometimes it's just pictured as normal, everyday life that everyone in the show accepts. Or should accept, you know, and that's the way it's played off. The spin is that people can't help their desires. God made them that way. And so their lifestyle should be accepted and approved and applauded. Anyone who speaks against that, that's hate speech. And so we're depriving people of happiness. And I'm stunned at the number of Christians who are applauding gay Christians who come out and are living true to themselves. And followers of Jesus are applauding this. But I have to tell you, both science and certainly the Bible do not support the born that way narrative. In fact, Dr. Lisa Diamond, a top researcher of the American Psychological Association and herself an avowed lesbian activist, and California psychologist Laura A. Haynes have recently stated, and they've written numerous times, the battle to disprove born that way and can't change is now over. They are pleading with the gay community to stop using this argument because the evidence just doesn't support it. It doesn't support it. Now, I have a great deal of compassion for the plight of men and women with same-sex attraction in our culture. It's a difficult thing. And I know Christians who won't even do business at stores and restaurants if they know the proprietor is obviously gay. But I think we should do the opposite. I believe the Bible teaches that we should build relationships with the LGBTQ community, that we should treat them with love and respect as we would anyone else. We should treat them with love without condoning their lifestyle choices, any more than we would approve of the other forms of sexual immorality like adultery or pornography or premarital sex or pedophilia, any of that. So our goal, though, is to make disciples of Jesus, not ostracize people. Now, even in my saying this, in this message, it's going to make some people mad and turn people off because they're going to misinterpret, because there's agendas out there. It takes courage and conviction to stand against the tide of the popular narratives. The world doesn't like it when we oppose or expose sin. That's just the truth. Like the Pharisees, they might react by trying to shame us instead. Don't be surprised to find Pharisees even in the church. Well, in an attempt to deny this miracle of Jesus and to squelch his popularity, the Pharisees called the parents of the once blind man in, and they decided to question them about what had happened here. In John chapter 9, starting with verse 19, it tells us, "Is this your son?" they asked. "Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see?" "We know he is our son," the parents answered, "and we know he was born blind, but how he can see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for already the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Christ would be put out of the synagogue. Don't you see? Out of fear, they threw their own son under the bus. So it takes courage to navigate a culture of fear. Our world really puts the pressure on. They do. And fear is honestly a very powerful motivator that we have to learn to navigate. The fear of others, the fears that other people are experiencing, and our own fears. We're going to have to navigate that. This coronavirus is a serious threat to lives, but fear and dread has caused all kinds of reactions of panic and depression, and in some cases, some very irrational behavior. And the truth is, throughout the ages, fear has caused believers to deny their faith and to compromise biblical principles. And we don't want that to happen. So here are the parents in John 9. They crumpled under the weight of fear. But their son, their healed son, was convinced that Jesus was the real deal. And he would not bail on Jesus. But his courage would cost him. But the Jewish leaders made good on their threat. He was banished from the synagogue. But he wasn't disappointed, because he had found the truth. So the Jews kept trying to get this man to concede that Jesus was a sinner like everyone else, that he was nothing special. And so in response, verse 25, he replied, "Whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see." Boom! The undeniable evidence of his lordship. I think some people today wonder, where could I get courage to stand up like that blind man, that one's blind man? And the answer is Jesus. When you genuinely are convicted about him, it's going to embolden you. Now, I believe in Jesus, and I'm really convicted about him. But can I admit to you that sometimes I'm afraid? With all the public speaking that I do, and videos, and the writing that I do as a preacher, I fear that I will unintentionally say something offensive or that will alienate people, and I'll lose opportunity to share the gospel with them. And it's happened on a few occasions. Sometimes what I said was foolish. Sometimes I was misinterpreted. Sometimes people were just too easily offended. Right now, many people are so hypersensitive with the issues being so hot. And so if you say one thing, you automatically get labeled as an enemy by one party or another, For too long, predominantly white churches have been against but silent about racial inequities. We've not said enough or done enough. But now when there's a lot of hubbub about it, and if you try to speak up, you can be so easily misinterpreted, and it can create a firestorm, as has happened recently to well-known church leaders. And you just can't win. I know that when I speak, I can't please everyone, and nor is that my objective, to please people. But I don't want to offend. I don't want to alienate. And we all likely say things unknowingly that are insensitive. We don't really mean to, but sometimes we do. So we must have the courage to speak truth, knowing that we will sometimes be misunderstood. Sometimes we'll be out there alone, like that blind man was. Sometimes the reaction against us may be extremely strong. We just have to know that going in. I have some African-American friends in our church to whom I've said, listen, if in ignorance I say something offensive, would you just please tell me about it? Let me know. Even if it hurts me, even if I don't want to hear it, please, please tell me. And they will speak the truth in love, because we have that kind of relationship that I'm thankful for. Let's continue looking at verse 26 and following. Then they asked the man, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And he answered, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Oh, do you want to become his disciples too? What a jab. And then they hurled insults at him and said, you are this fellow's disciple? We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow, we don't know where he comes from. And the man answered, now that's remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes? We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this, they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. It takes courage. It takes courage to navigate a hostile and blinded culture. These Pharisees were blinded by their own pride. They refused to accept their own faults and their need for Jesus, the identity of Jesus. They resisted believing. And in their pride and in their zeal, they vented their hostilities towards Jesus on the man that Jesus had healed. Not directly at Jesus, but on the man he had healed. Blind rage. So I'm saying it takes courage to express your faith in Jesus when the world wants to deny the obvious about him. You're going to experience some heat if you try to stand for Jesus. I was thinking of Butch and Jazita who professed their faith in Jesus in a predominantly Muslim land of Kosovo. And they're kicked out of their own home. And they suffer for it. Now, you may not experience that level of hostility. But the truth is, you could lose your job. You could lose some friendships. You could experience some sharp ridicule. A few weeks ago, I was backing out of my driveway, and I paused before I pulled on out to record my mileage. I was tracking my mileage, and then I looked both ways, you know, and I started to back out into the street. But what I hadn't seen was a pedestrian who was in my blind spot. In fact, he was moving at just the right pace, at the right rate of speed, that I didn't notice him. When I looked one direction, he was in the blind spot. When I looked the other way, he kept moving. And when I looked around, you know, he wasn't there again. But he was behind me, you know, and I didn't know that he was behind me. So I started to back again. And thankfully, I paused for one more glance. And that's when I noticed some movement coming out of my blind spot. And had I not triple checked, I would have run over that man because I had some blind spots. Now, I've talked about it before. Many of us have blind spots. For example, when someone says white privilege, for many white folks, that's like a breaker going off. You know, it's very disruptive. Because we may work hard not to be racist, but to think that we might be privileged somehow, in some way, that makes us feel uncomfortable and maybe even defensive. But rather than reacting defensively, we listen to our African-American friends who explain what they mean by white privilege and how they're experiencing this phenomenon, and it can open our eyes to some uncomfortable truths. And these blind spots happen in the political arena. Politicians or supporters are so bent on their agenda and so against the opponent's agenda that they will fail to listen to each other, to cooperate, or to see the plain truth of the situation right in front of them. And so they treat the opponent as an enemy. And to protect their pride and their policies, they may and do some extreme things or foolish things. And with bills and policies, lawmakers sometimes throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm just saying it takes humble courage to seek the truth and the best interest of everyone. We have to work at it. Well, Jesus, let's see how this story wraps up with Jesus in chapter 9, verse 35. Jesus heard what they had thrown this man out, went and found him and said, do you believe in the Son of Man? "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." And Jesus said, "You've now seen him, and in fact, he is the one speaking to you." And the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Then Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see," like this man, "and those who see will become blind." And some of the Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What? Are we blind too?" And Jesus said, "Well, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." I would rather be blind and given sight by Jesus than one who thought he could see but was truly blind. So, how do we gather the courage, like this once blind man, how do we gather the courage to navigate the minefields of 2020? Well, three quick factors from this story I think can help us. One factor that produces courage is desperation. Desperation. I mean, when there's no hope, when we're really desperate. The blind man had exhausted all possibilities of ever seeing, and Jesus came along and gave him sight. And when he was being grilled by the Jewish officials, he's out on the limb on his own. Even his parents wouldn't stand up with him. And all he had was the truth. But what better place to take our stand? Desperate people will do brave things, don't you see? And so this is the next factor as well, the might of right. I always say, you can't be wrong if you do what's right. No brainer. You put your faith in Jesus, walk in the way of Jesus, you're not going to be wrong. Last but most important factor is the Jesus factor. Open your heart and your mind to be truly convicted, deeply convicted about Jesus. And then he's going to open your eyes. And he's going to give you the impetus to stand firm and to live boldly for him. See, when you align with the Lord, you can't lose. You can't lose. If you're really convicted about Jesus, if you're convicted today that he is Lord, that he's the Savior, the only Savior, you're ready to be baptized, will you just call me at the number on the screen and I'll be glad to help you take that step. I'll be glad to do that. Well, thanks again for joining us online for the message today on this Independence Weekend. And I want to encourage you to invite someone to watch with you next Sunday, as we continue in our 2020 survival toolbox, and invite someone to join you so that you can discuss it together. And another possibility is you can join us now live for our in-person worship at 10:45 at the Western Hills Church of Christ on Sydney Road. We'd love to see you.